The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. Being a black woman in America comes with a set of challenges, issues, and stereotypes that I, as a white man, will never be able to fully understand. Now, the one thing I can do is listen. My guest today is Tamara Winfrey Harris, author of The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. And that's exactly what we set out to do in this episode. We talk wins, losses, microaggressions, racism, and everything in between. Now, quick note before we get started. At the beginning of this episode, when I'm about to introduce Tamara, I say episode 52. It's really episode 53. I made a mistake, and I know you probably never would have noticed that, but to quote a very famous black woman, I'm an artist, and I'm sensitive about my shit. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Pull up, Giddy. Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 52 now, the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, author of The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America, Tamara Winfrey Harris. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So give us a brief synopsis about your book, and then we'll go from there, because I have a lot of questions I want to ask you today. So I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, okay. So I wrote this book because I was angry about the way that people talk at and about Black women. So, you know, it seemed like every headline was about Black women as problems. You know, we were too broke, too sick, too fat, too single, too loose. My favorite was too successful to be marriageable. Mm. And that like bore no resemblance to the Black women that I knew, even some who were fat and broke and single and all, because it was a reductive discussion. And it erased our humanity, and it was based in stereotypes that were created by people who hate us. And so I wanted to write about those stereotypes, but most importantly, to interview Black women about what our lives are really like, which is a lot more nuanced and hopeful.
You also did a lot of research about where these stereotypes come from and the history of these stereotypes. So can we start there, like in the beginning? So where does this come from? And what are some great examples of some stereotypes that precede all of our lives?
So most of them came from antebellum America. So early days, like, how do you make it okay to enslave people? So you have to kind of position the people that you're enslaving as being something other than human. So that's where the idea of, you know, Black women as being like hypersexual and sexual aggressors, because, you know, you needed Black women to breed new human property. And, you know, Black women were raped during slavery. The idea that Black women are super strong and masculine and aggressive, you know, needed Black women to work in the fields. You needed them to work alongside men so they couldn't be pure and delicate. And, you know, the idea that Black women are meant to serve and don't have their own needs. Well, you need Black women to work in the kitchen and raise other people's families and not notice that theirs are sold away or killed. And then in the middle 60s, there was the Moynihan Report. It was a report from the government. And it said at the time, this is before the Civil Rights Act was signed. So like my paternal grandparents in Mississippi couldn't even vote. They said the most damaging thing in the Black community, not systemic racism, was that Black women were the heads of too many households. And so then you get kind of a coalescence of all of those stereotypes. So, you know, Black women are too loose because they keep having all these kids and they're chasing away their men with their angry masculinity. And so, you know, all of those. So those four stereotypes, Jezebel, Mammy, Sapphire, the matriarch, have followed us over centuries and continue to affect how people see us.
We've covered that before on my podcast, especially, but mostly just in the medical field, because I've talked to doctors about how Black women have to advocate for themselves more than any other person when, you know, going to see the doctor, because those stereotypes, be it that they're hundreds of years old, are still there, which is insane when you think about it. Mm-hmm. If somebody's in pain, believe that they're in pain.
Yes. I mean, that happened here. So I'm in central Indiana, and there was a case last year of a Black woman doctor who was in the hospital with COVID. You probably saw this, and was recording videos online and saying, this isn't the treatment that I should be getting. She's a doctor. She knows what she's talking about. She's dead, you wow. know, because they wouldn't listen to her.
That's insane. I know you spoke, also mentioned hypersexuality. And then, you know, there was a big, deal with Cardi and Meg's song last year. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that. I don't see it as a big deal, but I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, Cardi and Megan were using sexuality to sell music, and I like the song. Yeah. And they were using sexuality to sell music, just like men have been doing. Mm. The Rolling Stones did it. Jay-Z does it. Snoop Dogg, who for some reason was clutched his pearls and was scandalized by the song WAP, he does it. He claims to have owned a brothel. So it's like, you can monetize Black women's sexuality, but they can't monetize their own sexuality. Don't get me started.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And yeah. As somebody, you know, with a daughter, I want my daughter to feel empowered no matter what it is she chooses to do. If she chooses to make a song like WAP, then feel empowered. And I took it as an empowering moment that, hey, we're here and we're doing this. Let's talk about Black women in the workplace, because if I'm not mistaken, the most underpaid person I could be wrong. I don't have stats in front of me, but I believe I've heard that plenty of times. The most underpaid person in all of the workforce here in America, Black women. Is that still reign true? Am I making
Except
this up?
I hope I believe Native women.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute, because, you know, what are some ways to, I guess, disrupt that system and to make that more equal?
So, you know, people are talking about a lot of things. One, more transparency in wages. So, you know, I don't know about you, but everyone's always, you don't talk about how much money you make. You certainly don't talk to, you know, other that we need to be more transparent about what we make, because it gives other people better negotiation power. You know, if I tell my friend that I'm making X number amount of money for doing a similar job, then she can ask for that money. Also, you know, some states have made it illegal for employers to ask how much money you're making now. Because asking that keeps women and Black women perpetually underpaid. Because, you know, if I tell you I make $45,000 a year, then you're going to offer me just enough above that in order to entice me, even if the role is really worth more.
Right. That's a very, very solid point. When you're writing this book and you interviewed a lot of activists and mm-hmm. leaders and things of that nature, what was the one thing that you felt they all kind of maybe had in common with the people that you interviewed?
So one, that they were very tireless in working for their community, but they all said that they don't feel that women like them get enough acknowledgement or support for the work that they mm-hmm. do. I just had a conversation at the official launch of the book with the four women that you'll find in the power chapter. And they all talked about having, you know, one right now was looking for housing. Another just found out that her, you know, food assistance was being taken away. And they're all women that work really hard in the community. One to support women having birth justice, you know, another one with Black Lives Matter locally, and they're struggling to survive. And so they talked about how Black women have like put a lot of boots on the ground over the last years. People have been fighting about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all of these issues, but then Black women aren't getting a lot of support in surviving themselves or attention when things like police violence happen to us.
Yeah, it seems rare that the leaders of these organizations, especially if they're Black women, are the ones that the media goes to for whatever reason. Let's talk about the media, because I see something in the notes here that says the media's continued fascination with Black women. How do you feel Black women are being portrayed in the media in 2021? At the very least, is it going into a positive direction?
it's better. Like, you know, at the beginning of the book, like some of the, like the blatant disrespect and some of the things that it happened that I wrote about in 2015, well, I was like, you know, that just wouldn't happen now. So bravo, cancel culture. I said, teach people to keep bigoted-ish to themselves.
Right.
for the last several years. But, you know, it's not perfect. So I talked about the fact that we have Kamala Harris in the White House, which is like a triumph. It's a move forward. But also when you look at how people talk about Kamala Harris, you get back to she slept her way to success. She's too aggressive in the way she questions people on the Senate floor. And, you know, we really don't want her as president. But once we've chosen an old white guy as a Democratic nominee, we should really get a black woman. So where's Kamala? Where's Stacey Abrams? And so there's Jezebel, Sapphire, and Mammy all over again, even in our moment of triumph. So we have to be super vigilant that those things don't end up degrading what should be like important victories.
Understood. And I know you're doing a ton of these today. So I want to ask you this last question. I'll let you out of here. Microaggressions. It's something that as a white man, I'm still kind of learning about, you know, to this date. And I hate to ask, you know, people of other genders or other races to correct me when I perform some kind of microaggression, but it is also how I learn. And I do want to learn these things. So what do you think is probably the most common microaggression towards black women that, you know, we as white people can just stop doing as soon as humanly possible?
You know, it's probably sort of the idea that we are angry / sassy, spicy, the neck swiveling black woman. You even saw that when the Obamas were in the White House, they were always trying to do that to the Obama girls, the youngest one. People, oh, she's so sassy. She's so, I'm like, she's just sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough one. And it feeds into that whole idea of black female strength and hardness and toughness that it's not useful to us.
And that also spills over into the medical attention that we talked about earlier as well. It's just like, so there's so much strength that, you know, they can't really be hurt, you know?
Yeah. There's actually research out there. Everybody go to the Google that there are some, you know, medical professionals who believe that black people feel less pain. So, you know, when a black woman goes to them and says, I'm in pain, they're like, yeah, no, you're not.
Wow.
You know,
that's insane when you think about it. I mean, it makes zero sense whatsoever. The book is The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. Tamara Winfrey Harris, thank you so much for taking time and doing this. I really appreciate it. And I would love to catch back up with you another day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Tamara Winfrey Harris. Make sure you get her book, The Sisters Are All Right, and follow her on the gram as well at Tamara Winfrey Harris. While you got the app open, follow me at DolaWhite101, DolaWhite 101. That's good for Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, all of that. Make sure no matter what platform you're listening on, you subscribe and follow. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, go on and give me them 5 stars. Write me a very nice review. Definitely appreciate that. Back next Wednesday morning with a brand new episode talking real estate with my good friend William Wilson. Like I said, talking real estate, racism in real estate, whole bunch of shit. It's a great episode. Check that out next Wednesday morning. Available everywhere you get your podcast. That's it. I'm out. I'm gone.